Illinois' fiscal year starts tomorrow, and that means a whole new set of laws will be going into effect.
Workers in Chicago and parts of Cook County, they're getting a raise.
Drivers 87 and older will be required to take a driving test annually.
The Supreme Court ruled against the Trump administration's efforts to end birthright citizenship.
It took the court this long to come out with an opinion that many of us thought was an easy thing to do.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Patrick Smith in for Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. We're breaking down the biggest stories of the week in our weekly news recap. Police Superintendent Snelling and the Chicago FBI chief both announce abrupt resignations. Mayor Johnson introduces a bill giving Chicago renters new protections. Plus, Governor Pritzker issues a disaster proclamation over recent storms and tornadoes as the Chicago region remains under extreme heat warning.
Day three of this dangerous heat wave.
Heat index readings around 105 each afternoon.
The heat dome, as it's known, shifts east by the end of the week.
Landlords could soon be paying another fee to rent out their units.
It would create a rental registry so that landlords can be more easily identified, and it would reduce or ban hidden fees.
And Chicagoans deserve an approach that puts people first and not profits.
Snelling said he's retiring July 15th.
I'm worried. Who's going to take this job just to be superintendent for 5 months?
We'll get into those stories and much more. Before we get into the conversation, Sun-Times Opinion Pages editor and columnist Ramana Hussein, who's one of our panelists today, joins me now. Hey, Ramana.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for making the time. Okay, so for folks at home who might want to share their opinion with the Chicago Sun-Times, what is the difference between an opinion column and a letter to the editor?
So we have op-eds that we run a couple days times a week. And so those are longer pieces that people write. They're about 750 words. And then we also have letters to the editors, which sometimes we tell people who turn in op-eds to us, we're like, this can be turned into a letter. Mm. So those are shorter opinion pieces they can be, or they can just be like a one sentence thought that people have about, you know, news that's going on. A lot of times we have people reacting to the op-eds and other letters that we have. Just a couple days ago, we had someone who had written an op-ed. It was about how people from Naperville can still be Chicagoans. He's professor from, an out-of-state university. And we had him, we go, you know, this could be like a talker. And so we had him shorten it down to 375 words. And of course, it generated a lot of responses, especially from Chicagoans who weren't happy that he said that people who were raised in Naperville, born and raised in Naperville, I think he was born in a different suburb, but never really lived there, but talked about always being there, and he had ancestors who were from there. And so it had it like brought on a lot of conversations.
So it was your fault I had to read that drivel. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
What are you like, is there something, what are you looking for both in an op-ed and in a letter to the editor?
So, you know, we try to look for pieces that are conversational. We have a lot of people who are really smart individuals who send us op-eds, but they're written so dryly. And so we try to tell people, like, you know, we're trying to get a bigger audience to read this. You know, we have a lot of professor types who write, and we're just like, try to make it seem like you're talking to someone about it. So conversational is the number one thing that I tell people to look out for. Sometimes we have people who write letters and they're great, but it just doesn't sound like a good letter. Like, you know, I find myself like getting really bored reading it. So, you know, I like the snappier for letters. I like the snappier. Even sometimes a one line sentence can be a great letter. It can say so much. So conversational is the one thing I try to tell people to, you know, keep in mind.
Any topics or news stories that you've been getting like a lot of responses from the public about?
Bear Stadium.
Oh yeah.
The Bears
yeah.
proposed stadium. I got a lot. I'm still getting letters about that. And I think that's going to be something that we're going to, it's going to be Donald Trump and the Bears stadium, which is going to be one that we're going to get a lot of people talking about.
From now to eternity.
Yes.
Well, the letters of the editor are one of my favorite sections of the paper. So
great.
Thanks so much for doing the work, the fact checking, the editing work that you do. And thanks for sitting down with me. If people want to send in letters to you, how do they do that?
If they want to send letters, they send it to letters@suntimes.com. If they want to send an op-ed piece, then it's opinions@suntimes.com. No hyphen between the Sun and Times.
Let's get to the recap. Also on the panel this week, Shia Kappas, political reporter and author of Politico's Illinois Playbook newsletter, and freelance journalist Lee John Greco. We started our conversation talking about Larry Snelling, Chicago's police superintendent, announcing that he's retiring.
He's been around a while in you know, the police department, and this is the time. There's been concern that maybe he was, you know, butting heads a little bit with the mayor on how to run things, though it's hard to be critical, I think, of the superintendent just because crime is down, and he really did a great job taking Chicago through some big events, including the Democratic National Convention.
Yeah. Okay, so, 3 years is actually like a pretty normal amount of time for a superintendent to serve. But it's the middle of summer when we typically see crime spike. And then at least publicly, it's exactly 2 weeks notice, which feels short to me. I mean, Lee, what do you think?
Yeah. The timing definitely seems odd. This is not the type of job that you would typically give 2 weeks notice. Yeah. So I'm wondering what else is on the horizon for Snelling. You know, this could just be sort of political timing. It's typical that when a new mayor comes in, that they pick their own CPD chief. So maybe Snelling is figuring, well, I'm going to get out before Johnson is ousted by voters. So, it's hard to say why he's leaving. I will say on the DNC, I mean, yes, CPD did a good job with that in concert with all of the federal agencies. But I think there was a lot of fear that it was going to be 68 again. And anyone who covered the DNC probably saw the crowds were just not like that. So I'm hesitant to give CPD a ton of credit when, frankly, they didn't have a lot to deal with, I think, compared to the previous DNC that we had in the 60s.
Ramana, so Shia and Lee both mentioned DNC. When I think of Superintendent Snelling's time, I think of, you know, he's superintendent during Operation Midway Blitz. What stood out to me about his actions then was he really stood by his officers. Critics said that they were supporting or cooperating with federal agents at times, and he absolutely pushed back on that. Yeah. You know, whatever you think of that, that was definitely his position there. And then, you know, as we mentioned, he was superintendent during a historic crime decline last year. What do you think about his legacy or the timing here?
I think we've been hearing about rumors about him, you know, kind of butting heads with the mayor. But at the same time, there was no major controversy while he was in office. So I think he's leaving with a pretty good legacy. I mean, there were people even sending me letters saying that, you know, the police were cooperating with federal agents. But, you know, he was standing up there and saying that, no, our police officers aren't going to be, you know, he was like standing pretty strong. So I think just from what we've seen, I think people are pretty positive about it. But I do think the summer thing, I just think in terms of safety and crime, a lot of people, that's on their minds, especially in the middle of the summer. So people are probably just wondering like, oh, what's going to happen? But, you know, there is an acting superintendent. I think, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. So you can't really make any predictions. There's always people saying like, there's definitely crime and that's something that's people are concerned about. But I don't think him leaving is cause for concern right away.
I will say, though, for Johnson's own legacy, this is probably one of his strengths in terms of his appointments. I mean, he had a lot of appointments early on in his tenure that took a while. He's had resignations, firings since then. Snelling is kind of one of the silver linings of those, in part because I think, Shia, as you had mentioned, he has been with CPD for essentially his entire career. He grew up in Englewood, you know, kind of this son of the South Side story. And so I think that helped build a lot of trust within the force when, frankly, that was at kind of an all-time low with the previous CPD chief who was from Texas, didn't really know Chicago that well. So I think moving forward, whoever Johnson picks as his next CPD chief, it would be good to kind of stay along those themes and maybe pick another person who has that kind of history and trust already built in.
Yeah. Snelling was so popular. When you would go to the Bud Billiken parade in August, he was like, people were, I had a picture of it in today's newsletter. People were clamoring to get photos with him, like he was this rock star or something. You know, it was pretty wild. The mayor was walking in the middle of them, but everybody wanted a photo with Snelling because he was a very on the ground. He is a very on the ground police chief. I mean, you saw it in a lot of events where, you know, if police were out at the Democratic convention or having to deal with Operation Midway Blitz, he wasn't calling it in from the headquarters. He was there on the ground with people. And I think that that gave a lot of that was good for people who watched and people in the force.
I mean, I compare it to I think of David Brown, who was the preceding superintendent who came in from Texas, where the criticism from within the ranks and otherwise was that he was really not present almost at all and often was out of town. One thing I did want to mention, you know, I said 2 weeks was a short amount of time for Larry Snelling. The Chicago's FBI chief announced yesterday that his last day is going to be Monday. So that's, I think, maybe one business day that he's giving notice. But then the FBI tweeted, because of course they tweeted, that, quote, anyone who is not on board with this FBI under the leadership of President Trump is free to leave. A lot to unpack there and what the impact will be. We're going to talk with John Seidel on Say More coming up at 10 about that, and I know there's more reporting there. I do want to move on to other news because I think, you know, we got that law enforcement news yesterday. The big news of the week has been just how dangerously hot it is. The Chicago region remains under an extreme heat warning today. The combo of heat and humidity this week led to heat index values around 100 to 110 degrees. Does anyone have any tips for staying cool in this heat?
Stay in the air conditioning. I actually went running on Monday and on Wednesday. I don't run very fast, but I was run walking more than usual, and I got hit in the head with the blackbird. But
oh, yeah,
the red blackbird. Time of year. Beware.
So it was definitely very hot. And then, of course, I was meeting, I had some cousins out from out of town and had dinner with them on Tuesday. And as I was leaving, I realized the coolant in my air conditioning just went out. So my tip is just try to stay cool, stay inside as much as possible in the air conditioning.
Listeners to Say More will know that I constantly talk too much about how I bike to and from work. So I have been biking. I do a jump in the lake on my way home to try to bring the body temperature down, but it still kind of wrecked
me. I spared you guys. I made sure that I were down here because I thought about biking and then I was like, no, for the sake of the other guests, I will not be doing that today. But yeah, to stay cool, I was in the lake yesterday. I went in the day before. The lake is still pretty icy.
It really is.
Yeah. So if you want to cool off, just I was in and out. I jumped and then I, you know, basically just dried off without my towel. It was that hot. But the other thing I want to mention too is, you know, for elderly folks, for children, for pets, if you are going to be outside, do it early in the morning. You know, I've got a big yellow lab at home. I'm putting ice in his bowl. He seems to love that. So also think about folks that, you know, might have a little trouble taking care of themselves in this heat.
Yeah, very important. Governor Pritzker issued a state disaster proclamation for 11 counties hit by severe weather in the spring and early summer. That proclamation frees up additional state resources to help with recovery, but there's no guarantee that Illinois is going to get any federal aid, right?
Yeah, don't hold your breath on it. I mean, there were major tornadoes. That's what he issued the proclamation for. Unusual to have, I think there were 11 tornadoes in Illinois. That's unusual for the state. But don't hold your breath, mainly because, remember, some months ago, there was major flooding on the south side, south suburbs. 5,000 structures were damaged. It's the thing that, of course, you would submit to FEMA to get assistance to help all these people. And the Trump administration said, nope. So I think, you know, Illinois residents should, you know, don't hold your breath on whether you're going to get federal funding from the Trump administration, who isn't really catering to what Governor J.B. Pritzker wants for folks.
And as you're mentioning, I mean, we've seen this sort of a record stretch of severe weather this year. City crews are still cleaning up fallen trees and debris from the storms 3 weeks ago. The National Weather Service has confirmed 178 tornadoes in the state.
Not 11. Yeah. Oh, wow.
Well, but 178 statewide, I mean, which is, I believe, a new record. I mean, are we concerned this is our new normal, extreme weather like this?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. It's all because of climate change. And, you know, as far as things like flooding on the west side, a lot of west side residents are still waiting for assistance from 2-3 years ago. This is a chronic problem. The city is trying to tackle it, you know, through infrastructure improvements. But yeah, you know, in the meantime, people are waiting for assistance right now.
Yeah, I said concern. This is a new normal. It seems obvious that it is. And we're not, at least for now, getting federal help with that. I want to turn to something completely differently. The latest on the Chicago mayoral race.
Yeah, sure. You know, in the future, everyone is going to run for mayor for 15 minutes. And so,
except for not the mayor himself. He's not running for re-election.
Oh, yeah, of course.
As we
yeah.
know
he's
right
he's
now.
Not saying it. Neither is Janulius, right? Yeah, they yeah, haven't yeah, said yeah. anything yet. But yes, the people who have announced, the latest on Saturday was Congressman Mike Quigley. Mm-hmm. He represents parts of the north side of Chicago in the suburbs. He announced his candidacy at the Uptown Theater, which drew a lot of interest. Mm-hmm. Some of the folks that I interviewed there were there for Quigley. But I have to say, I interviewed at least two people who were just there for the Uptown Theater itself, which has not been open to the public.
So it was just like a chance to get inside.
Yeah, it was just a chance to see it. It's a beautiful but rundown theater. It has been waiting for assistance for a long time. The owner wants, you know, more public money. But aside from that, the people who were excited about Quigley, he made a speech. He mentioned tackling the pension crisis. Mm-hmm. That got a lot of cheers. And then what got even more cheers was talking about affordable housing, which I know we're going to talk about later with the mayor's latest ordinance that he introduced on that. And, you know, it's still early on in the race, so it's hard to say who is kind of leading this right now, you know. We will see over the next coming months when more people announce. But Quigley is entering a pretty crowded field already. Mm-hmm. But I will say, compared to, say, like Illinois state comptroller Susana Mendoza, who is running more from the right, he's probably going to take a little bit more of a progressive tack here. And he's also been around for a while, so he's a political veteran. People on the north side, obviously, know who he is. So I imagine he's going to use that to his advantage.
We are going to start knowing July 28th. That's when you're going to see candidates start mm-hmm. with their petitions.
Mm, okay.
So we're going to see most likely an Alexei Janulius. We're going to see the mayor's, team get out there and start with petitions. Right now, there are 15 people who have either officially announced, will probably announce, or could announce. We'll see that. By the end of the month, we're going to know like who 15, the players are going to be.
So just to be clear, July 28th is the first day you can start collecting signatures. So that is a day we should look to as
just a few more and then
weeks.
You're going to see a lot of stories from me and others about and I think Laura Washington in the Tribune just had something about, is it appropriate for a Mike Quigley or an Alexei Janulius or a Maria Pappas or George Cardenas to be running for office for mayor while they are also running for their current office?
Yeah.
Do we
care? Yeah, Mike Quigley just won his primary, which you can kind of assume he's going to when he's the incumbent. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, obviously a Democratic stronghold. But yeah, he said during his run earlier this year for his congressional seat that he wasn't going to say anything about the mayoral race until he was done with that. So kind of similar issue to the Illinois 9th race as well, where we had Evanston Mayor Daniel Biss had only recently won his mayoral campaign. And then next thing you know, he's running for another office. Mm.
Governor Pritzker made a trip down to Texas. Shia, what was he doing in the Lone Star State?
It was a big coming home. If you remember, a year ago, Texas Democrats called Pritzker and said, we need help. We're trying to stop this redistricting plan that's happening in our state. The only way to do it is to break quorum in our state legislature. Mm-hmm. He said, come over to Illinois. So 50 state legislators from Texas came to Illinois in August last year. That broke quorum, that prevented Texas Governor Greg Abbott from getting through his legislation to change the redistricting.
Right.
It was very dramatic. It kicked off a national campaign to redistrict around the country. And these Texas Democrats were so thankful for Governor Pritzker to open his arms and bring everybody in. And so this was their statewide convention was last weekend, and they had invited Pritzker, and he went and spoke, and everybody was crazy to see him. So I've heard almost all of the governor's major speeches since he's been elected almost 8 years ago. And this was probably at least in the top 10. It was a really a thoughtful speech about how the governorship is important to him. Mm. At which point somebody yelled, "Run for president!"
You know, I'm sure he hated that.
He's like, "You must." Yeah. His response was, "You must be my cousin." You know, it was very funny. In political world,
yeah,
it was funny.
Ramona, I have to say, so you know, this is maybe provincial in my thinking. I think of Pritzker as a big name and a big presence, and it sounds like his presence is growing. But I have to admit, when I leave Illinois, even to Michigan, people kind of know who he is, but he does not have the kind of national presence that maybe I kind of think he does from here in Illinois.
That's what I feel too. Like when I go other places, I'm like, do people know who the governor of Illinois is? But I do feel like, you know, just being someone who, like, you know, gets a lot of opinions and like follows the news, it seems like his name is out there and people know who he is. It's kind of like when Brandon Johnson was, you know, speaking out and had the Instagram videos during Operation Midway Blitz. It's like that's when his name recognition kind of became more national. I mean, people know who Brandon Johnson is, but it's just like it's just like more people are talking about him. I think the same with Pritzker. So I think slowly his name is coming out there and more people are knowing who he is. It's just waiting to see whether he's going to, you know, be eyeing the White House anytime soon, or at least officially saying anything.
Well, and this, sorry to interrupt, this speech follows him speaking in New Hampshire, speaking in Georgia, speaking in North Carolina. What are all those states?
Where,
you know, that's a presidential travel map of, you know, early battleground states. So I don't think it's coincidence. It's not. It's probably not just him wanting to go there, but these are major Democratic strongholds, and they want to know what this guy's about and whether, you know, they know that he's on the radar for a potential presidential candidacy, so they just want to get to know him too. So,
okay, Lee, we went from the mayor to the governor. I want to go back to the mayor, the current mayor, Mayor Brandon Johnson. He's proposing some new protections for Chicago renters. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
Yeah, sure. So this is the Protect Renters Ordinance that he introduced on Monday. So this is going to amend city code. They are going to go after these non-transparent junk fees and after landlords who are evicting tenants without good reason. The ordinance would require those landlords to provide a valid reason before evicting a tenant. It would also create an annual registration of all rental units, and then landlords would have to pay a fee. That fee would go into helping the city basically kind of police bad landlords and everything and enforce all of these rules. Now, of course, no surprise, landlords are coming out against this kind of in the same way that they were when Johnson rolled out his Bring Chicago Home ordinance that was supposed to raise funds to combat homelessness. So this is already setting up a really interesting debate in city council, obviously pitting your progressives and Democratic socialists against your more moderate wing. But I think it's going to be a tricky vote, which won't come until the fall, by the way, it does. So this is a long way away. It's going to set up a tricky vote because the city said that about 54% of Chicago households are renters. So that is a pretty big chunk of voters out there.
Right back into it. Shia, I want to talk about the gas tax freeze. There were more than a dozen new laws that went into effect yesterday. One of them was that gas tax freeze that we heard a little clip about. Tell us about this.
Well, first, they're not freezing the entire gas tax.
Okay, well, I'm glad I asked you.
48, you know, they're increasing, they are pausing the increase on the gas tax.
Okay, yes.
So that means instead of going up to 49 cents a gallon, it will stay at 48 cents a gallon.
Oh,
basically.
That, I'm going to feel that one. That one.
So, and it's just over 6 months. And the reason they did that, when legislators were meeting in May, if you recall, the gas was going up, it was going crazy. Everybody was pretty much worried that it was going to be really terrible. They passed a law that said, okay, we will pause the increase that's coming in July. And this has been a regular increase since J.B. Pritzker took office in 2018. It goes up about 1% every year, and it goes to fund infrastructure, roads, bridges. It's a good thing. And for the most part, you don't notice it because it's just a penny or so every gallon. But this time they're pausing it for 6 months. But now the ironic thing is, this week there are stories out about how gas is actually going down now. And so, and here we have the pause, but maybe we didn't need the pause. I don't know.
Well, is it even good? Is it smart government? Okay, so it's a penny a gallon for us. I don't mean to make light of folks who are.
No,
but like, how much are you going to feel that? Whereas I'd assume this fund will be, you know, at least somewhat affected by losing that increase for,
right,
for these 6 months.
Right, for 6 months. But I think the thinking is it's better to try to help consumers even or appear in an election year.
Yeah, is it that you want a headline or you want someone like me to say there's a gas tax freeze?
It's an election year. Right. We would like to let voters know that we are thinking about them, even this little 1% gas tax increase.
Okay, yeah. So maybe not good politics, but or not good government, but good politics. Lee, I mentioned a lot of new laws. Another change that arrived yesterday that will impact people without legal status, their ability to go to college. Can you tell me about this?
Yeah, so Governor Pritzker signed a plan into law Friday that's going to allow undocumented immigrants to pay in-state tuition at public universities. So unsurprisingly, this law was passed out of both chambers on partisan votes. Republicans came in against it. But Democrats are saying that these immigrant first-generation marginalized students shouldn't be left behind just because of where they were born. Should add that the Justice Department claims that Illinois unconstitutionally discriminates against U.S. citizens who are not afforded the same reduced tuition rates for scholarships.
Okay. Thanks for that. Okay. Go ahead, Shia.
There are lots of other new laws, too, that are very interesting.
There sure are. And Shia, I had you tell me about one.
Okay.
You told me about one. Romana, can you tell us about new age requirements for driving tests?
Oh, yeah. We have a lot of letter writers who've written about this before. But basically, I think starting yesterday, the driver's test, it used to be 79 that you had to take a driver's test every year, but now it's 87. I think it came on the heels of a study that in 2023 that said that the seniors, I don't know if it's called seniors, but basically that age group probably causes the least amount of car wrecks or car accidents. So they just made the age higher. I had a letter writer in 2024 talk about how in Florida you only have to take the test once and you never take it again. But I don't know if that's really the right way to go either. And actually earlier this year, I also had another gentleman write to us about how he had to take the test again. He's 81, so this is like the old threshold, which is 79.
Right.
So he talked about how he was... he said it was easier to pass a driver's test. The last time he took it was when he was in high school, and he wanted to go to the prom, and it was like the early 60s, and he talked about how he failed, and then he went back, and then he was able to take his prom date, and then it was a really nice story. But he's like, you know, when I went this time, it was a breeze.
It was easy.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we should know that even after these changes, Illinois still has one of the strictest renewal requirements for older drivers, despite what some people might think. As you were just saying, a 2023 report from the Illinois Secretary of State shows that drivers 75 and older are actually involved in the least number of crashes compared to any other age group. So I know there's a stereotype out there about elderly drivers, older drivers. The numbers don't back that up, at least. So your readers have a point here.
Yeah, they definitely do. And I understand why, a lot of people, I know a lot of people who have, older parents, and they don't want them driving.
Right, yes.
So you know what I mean? And it's pretty, and when they renew, it basically, I think it doesn't, the current law says that a family member can report.
Yes,
like
you
any
can
cognitive
now report level, yes.
Or physical issues.
Yes.
So I think there's a lot of family members who don't want their parents driving anymore, or like their, older relatives driving, just to be safe. I mean, I think that's good. I think the age group that has the highest number of accidents is 21 to 34. So do we make younger? I mean,
they should take a test.
I have teenage nephews, and I just drove in the car with one of them last week, and I was like, oh no. I kept them, kept lecturing them. I'm like, look back. And then,
interesting that the younger folks don't vote, but all those older voters
are the ones that vote.
So they like this.
I feel like it's regardless of age. It's just whoever is looking at their cell phone or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I like this for the conflict avoidant. Instead of trying to take the keys from your dad, you can just narc him out. That's good. All right, Shia, I can tell you are excited new laws.
Okay, well, one, a little wonky. There's a new early childhood education department in the state, mm-hmm. which a lot of people are really happy about because it allows for better coordination for parents and families trying to get care for their kids. There is an expanded definition of cyberbullying that also includes posting of digital images. That's becoming more of an issue. There is expanding what animals are banned from traveling shows.
Do you have an example?
Yes.
Okay.
Right now, already banned are elephants coming to Illinois, but now large cats, cougars, jaguars, leopards. So I don't know what's left in these shows.
Yeah, well,
I don't know.
I will say, I remember going to a Monroe County Fair in Michigan and seeing like a big cat in like a cage where it basically couldn't turn around. It was heartbreaking. So I not to be political here, but I'm going to say that sounds like a good idea to me.
And then the one that a lot of people are really happy about is cocktails to go.
Something we can all agree on.
Yes, the pandemic era law allowing cocktails to go is now permanent. I should also mention Chicago and Cook County minimum wage hikes also took effect yesterday. In Cook County, the minimum wage increased to $15.40 an hour for non-tipped employees. Within Chicago, the minimum wage is now $17.05 an hour. Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul shared his thoughts on Tuesday's decision by the High Court to uphold birthright citizenship. What did Attorney General Raoul say?
Well, this was a very personal thing for him, in part because his mother was not a citizen when she arrived here. Mm-hmm. So he is basically a birthright kid. I mean, it wouldn't have affected, he's a citizen now, or is a citizen. So it didn't affect him, but it was very personal to him. And he was surprised that it wasn't unanimous, that the 14th Amendment seems so clear that, of course, if you were born in this country, you're a citizen. And he was disappointed that it wasn't more unanimous. It was a loss for Donald Trump, and Kwame Raoul, as the Illinois Attorney General, was part of the case and that went to the Supreme Court to challenge this law. So it was bittersweet in that his side won, but he was surprised that not everybody was on board with
it. Yeah, we had a law professor on Say More, and just at least his expert opinion was like, this was easy, and yet it actually ended up being a very close decision at the Supreme Court, and he was surprised by that. Did we hear from any other Illinois politicians about that birthright ruling in particular?
Well, you have Delia Ramirez, a congresswoman. She is in a similar position. Her mother was not born here when she was came to the United States. And so it was another personal thing for her. There are Republicans, who disagree.
Ramana, last Thursday, so last week, the Supreme Court sided with President Trump on immigration. Yeah. So the birthright citizenship decision was a loss for President Trump, a victory for President Trump last week, allowing the Trump administration to end temporary protected status for Haitians and Syrians. What kind of impact is that going to have on the migrant community here, the immigrant community here in Chicago?
I actually had someone reach out to me about that because World Refugee Day was June 20th. So one of the gentlemen from the I think it was like a Syrian organization. I'm probably messing up the name, but I think they're going to be working extra hard to make sure that they're, the Haitian and the Syrian immigrants here who have temporary protection, can, find another legal pathway, green cards, maybe through a family sponsor or through their work. So, I think there's about 350,000 Haitians and 6,000 Syrians. And I think Kwame Raoul spoke out about this ruling as well. So,
because he's Haitian.
Haitian. Mm-hmm. And so, it's, and then a lot of people from other countries who have temporary protected status are wondering whether this is going to be affecting them as well. So I think a lot of, organizations that work with immigrants and people with temporary protected status, I think they're going to be working hard harder to make sure that, you know, these individuals are protected.
We don't know what President Trump's administration will do, but we should say that the Supreme Court said whatever they decide to do on TPS, temporary protected status, courts have no role in reviewing that. So whatever they decide to do will be the final word on that. Lee, I want to stick with immigration and immigration enforcement. Block Club Chicago, which you sometimes write for, had some great reporting this week about the federal agents behind Operation Midway Blitz, which we talked about earlier in regards to Superintendent Snelling. Anything stand out to you from that investigation?
Yeah, sure. So as we know, a lot of these federal agents who came into town earlier this fall, late summer during Midway Blitz, they were concealing themselves behind masks. It was very difficult to see who they were. They didn't have badge numbers in the same way that CPD officers would. So Block Club went through this investigation based on records that they got through a through a lawsuit that they had, and they identified 271 of them. And they found that these Border Patrol agents were actually trained specifically for crowd control. So basically, they knew how to handle all of these crowds, and yet they threw tear gas at them. They assaulted residents, shot two people. Of course, folks will remember the shooting of Chicago and Miramar Martinez. The officer who shot her was Charles Exum. He had nearly 21 years on the job. So years and years of training. Right. Other people had, you know, 15 years or a decade plus of training. And so on top of that, they also lied about what happened in several of these instances where they said that, you know, civilians had escalated or tackled them or something. And then when you go back to the body cam footage, that is not the case. So very thorough investigation on the part of Block Club, you know, holding these people to account when, you know, we really couldn't before because you could not identify them.
Yeah. And I think very important, as you're pointing out, that these are veteran agents with a lot of training. I remember a lot of the reporting was about how poorly they handled big crowds.
Yeah.
It turns out that is not because of a lack of training. So obviously there was something else behind that.
Well, they know better, but then also it seemed that Greg Bovino, who was leading the charge on Midway Blitz, there were instances where he, you know, congratulated these officers when they cracked down really hard on Chicagoans. So it seems that this was stemming from more of a culture problem within Border Patrol rather than, you know, a perceived lack of training or something.
Right. Block Club, great investigation, great news article. Ramana and I are more familiar with Block Club as, you know, employers of our spouses.
I actually heard about that story before it came out. I knew it was going to come out.
You got the big
scoop. I had to stay quiet.
Yes, we appreciate them for employing our spouses. Shia, really important story. I want to get back to the U.S. Supreme Court quickly. They decided this week to hear a challenge to Cook County's assault weapons ban. What are the details about this ban? What does it mean that they're taking it up?
This is pretty wild. This ban goes back to 1993. It's been in effect that long. It's been updated a few times, including in 2018, renaming it called the Blair Holt Assault Ban, named after a young man who tried to protect a friend, and he was killed in the process. And now Republicans have pushed for this. Gun rights folks have pushed to change the law. And lower courts, they've tried this before, and lower courts have ignored it. But now the Supreme Court says, yeah, we're going to hear it. So here we go. It's going to go to the Supreme Court sometime, I guess, later in the year or next year. And it means that Eileen O'Neill Burke, who will defend it, her team will defend it, is going to fight, you know, guns blazing. Ha ha ha.
I see what you did there. Yeah, yeah.
To uphold the law.
Yes.
This has been, and the law has been in effect so long, and a lot of people refer to this law as being helpful to keep guns at bay in Illinois. The challenge is surrounding Illinois, places like Indiana, right over the border. They allow AR-15s, which is what this law prevents. And so that's where a lot of the guns come from, is Indiana. Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about what to me was the biggest story last night before we learned about Superintendent Snelling and the FBI director, which is that the U.S. men's national team beat Bosnia-Herzegovina 2-0. now moving on to play Belgium in the next round.
Breaking news from the World Cup. The United States is headed to the round of 16 after defeating Bosnia-Herzegovina in 2-0 in Santa Clara, California.
To the deflection, Balogun scores! Flo Balogun, first to react to the deflection! He'll do the LeBron.
After review, the number 20 United States committee serious foul.
Yeah, it's going to be a red card.
The final decision is red card.
Wow.
Okay, so super exciting game. I have to admit, when the red card came out, I thought the U.S. might be in trouble. I also, knowing nothing about soccer, thought it was a terrible call. But I actually truly don't know if it was a good call or not, but I was outraged. Ramona, you recently wrote a column about how U.S. soccer, not U.S. soccer, but how soccer has moved past baseball to be the third most popular sport in the United States. I have to say, as a dad who likes baseball, this news is heartbreaking to me, but I'm actually surprised at this.
I actually like baseball, but I can understand why people find it boring. I only like watching the Cubs, and that's about it. If I go to another baseball game, I'm like, oh, it's kind of boring. Yeah. But I don't know. It's just really interesting because I was around in 1994 when the World Cup came to Chicago, and in the column I wrote about, I didn't even know what the World Cup was, and I had an uncle from India who wrote to, at that point, people used to write letters more than because most people didn't have phones in India. So my uncle wrote a letter and then to my mom, and in the bottom was in English to me and my siblings. And he said, oh, it's so exciting. The World Cup's coming to Chicago. And I was like, what's the World Cup? I had no idea. Wow. And so I did a column. I ended up doing research because recently some people told me that it was only an exhibition game. It was not a big deal. But we actually played five games. And the opening day ceremony, Oprah Winfrey fell. Diana Ross was supposed to hit a penalty kick. It was a stage penalty kick. And the goal opened, but she missed the penalty kick, but the goalpost still opened. So but that was the same day that the OJ Simpson Ford Bronco chase happened.
Oh, wow.
So more people were tuned into that than the World Cup. So I just wrote about how we've come a really long way. I have two nephews who are really into soccer. Mm-hmm. And so whenever I go somewhere and travel somewhere, they always want a jersey from that place. And so my husband is a football fan and I hate football. His grandfather
like
played
American football.
My parents, I grew up with parents, they're Indian immigrants, and they always thought that was crazy that Americans call it soccer while the rest of the world calls it football.
Yeah.
But anyway, I always tell my husband, because I just like anecdotally, I go, more kids play soccer than they play football these days. And I go, I think soccer is going to overcome football. American football. And
part because girls play, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
More girls
he's
who
always
play
like,
soccer.
No.
And less brain damage. Yeah.
The concussion
damage.
Rates are lower.
He goes, you're like losing it. He's like, there's no way this is going to happen. And I go, maybe not in our lifetime, but I just feel like soccer has really gotten popular.
Yeah.
And especially with the younger generation, I think people are really paying attention. And so the last 15, 20 years, like, I've had friends, I've been invited to World Cup, parties. And, I kind of wish that we had it in Chicago because I'm just watching the games and I'm like, oh, we should have gotten a ticket for one of these games. I mean, they're crazy. They're like $600 to like $1,000 and more. But it's just like I'm really into it. I turn it on every night and I just keep it on. I watch games from all over the world. And one of the cool things is just watching the racial diversity of some of these teams, the European American teams. It's just cool. It just feels like everybody's really into it.
So Ramona's talking about it would be cool to have it here. The planning for these sorts of events obviously takes years. So it was actually Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel at the time who decided not to have the World Cup here. You talked to him about that decision, right?
I interviewed him about that. And basically, when they were coming up with how they would do it, World Cup, the FIFA folks said, well, here's the contract that we would like. And part of that contract said, FIFA has the option to tell you to build a dome over your stadium. Mm-hmm. And Mayor Emanuel was like, hey, we can't have that in the contract because, the city's not going to build a dome just because you say you want a dome.
Yeah.
And they didn't, they're like, oh, no, it probably won't happen. He's like, well.
It's like, but it's in the contract.
It's in the contract. Yeah. We're not going to do it. Forget it. That was a no-go for him.
Yeah.
And so so that's why, in part, and concerns about what the city would have to pay to put on these games. I mean, that's what a lot of communities around the country are finding. It wasn't just, they're putting more money into putting these events on than they right. maybe they want to. And so Emmanuel thought that wasn't a good idea. So that's why there's no contract
but
here.
But what's the difference between, you know, wanting to bring FIFA here versus wanting to bring the Olympics here, which Chicago also wanted?
Tried hard for it, didn't get, obviously.
Yeah, I'm guessing the contract didn't say you have to build a dome and you have to put it on, you know. I mean, I think it's a matter of whatever the contract was about, I guess.
Lee, I mean, not as I'm not asking you as an expert here, but just as a Chicagoan, do you think Mayor Emmanuel made the right call, or are you kind of missing out on the World Cup action locally?
I mean, probably in terms of the dome part of the contract, that is the right call. And I do think, you know, as much as I love events like the Olympics, for example, and I love the excitement around the World Cup, when you do see the economic studies that come out of them, the cities that host those events usually lose. So I think in terms of, you know, avoiding a bad deal, Emmanuel probably made the right call. And, you know, I think that even if people aren't coming to Chicago specifically for the World Cup and staying in hotels and everything, people are going to bars. I feel like every single bar in Chicago has the World Cup on. Recess is packed every single day. So I think from like a local tax revenue standpoint, I don't think anybody is missing out on the World Cup not being here.
Shia, I'm not even going to try to do a, like an artful transition here. I'm just going to say that there's a really important story that happened that we haven't talked about yet, which is a frightening incident this week involving a TV news crew from CBS News Chicago. Can you tell us about this?
There was a news crew out on the museum campus, and they were attacked by three people, was it? You know.
Yeah, charged.
They're media. Media attacked by people because they're media. I don't really know. It's part of this growing anti-media attitude that people have. You're seeing more online harassment. You're seeing doxing. You're seeing attacks on social media. People yelling at you as a reporter when you're out covering an event. There are lawsuits. There's just this growing hostility towards media. I don't know enough about this particular event, whether these guys were attacking them because they were they're bad guys just attacking whoever they see, or were they attacking them because they were media?
Well, they did break their camera, and they broke the van, and one of them asked their dog to attack, and the dog actually refused.
Yes.
So good for the dog.
Good for
you
the
know?
Dog.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it is scary. I mean, when you have elected leaders saying things about journalists, and, you know, words like fake news, it can be scary.
I think we should note, though, that, again, we don't have a lot of evidence for, you know, them attacking the news crew because they were media. You know, these people who attacked them already had, you know, misdemeanors under their belt, charges against them that, you know, were not related to media at all. And then the hate crime charge that one of them received in this incident, hate crimes stem from a person's identity, right?
Right.
So, like, you are charged with a hate crime if you attack that person because of their racial identity, gender identity, religion, something like that. There's nothing in the definition of hate crime on the federal level or the state level that says, you know, oh, you're being charged with a hate crime because you attacked this person because of their job.
Right.
So I think based on that, at least what we know of, you know, we can't say that this was like a media-based attack.
Right. Although we do know they were out, you know, there was a CBS news truck.
Of course.
But you're right. I mean, police say the suspect yelled racial slurs during this attack.
Correct.
And so we will obviously be following that criminal case. We just have about a minute left. Ramona, I'm wondering if there's anything we didn't get to or anything you're looking forward to. I know you worked a lot on 4th of July weekend.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a bunch of letters tomorrow about the July 4th weekend. And it's America's 250th birthday. So we have a lot of thoughts, a lot of readers like speaking about that, and a lot of columnists talking about that too, about what it means to be an American in 2026, just with all the political upheaval and just like, you know, the country being divided. So we've got a lot of pretty good letters and about what people are going to do, whether they're going to celebrate July 4th this year. And, you know, we've had some readers who were around in 1976 and they said, you know, they liked that milestone better than this one, and it's interesting. We had a good mix of readers writing things that are like, you know, even though the, you know, there's a lot of things wrong in the United States, they still like what the United States represents. So I think a lot of people are thinking about the long weekend and just trying to trying to sit back and relax and trying to think of the good things.
Yeah. And we should note 76 was a rough year for America as well.
Yeah, so I know, for sure.
We like to think that things could not get worse, but things have been bad before.
Yes, for sure.
Looking forward to reading that coverage. Thank you all for joining us. That is it for the Weekly News Recap. My thanks to Lee Jung Greco, Shia Kappas of Politico, and Ramana Hussein of the Chicago Sun-Times.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Andrea Guthman, and edited by Ethan Schwab. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/InTheLoop. Thanks for listening.